You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Randy Frisch.
What we do in life very often is we try and solve for what's in front of us, but we don't think about what's next once we solve that, right? I mean, everything that we solve for creates its own next problem.
Randy is the CMO and co-founder of Uberflip, a content experience platform that empowers marketers to create content experiences at every stage of the buyer's journey. He has defined and led this movement, prompting marketers to think beyond content creation and truly put their customers first by focusing on the experience. This movement has fueled an annual conference, ConEx, the Content Experience, that brings together over 750 passionate marketers and a North American-wide ConEx tour. Randy is also host of ConEx, the Content Experience Show podcast, was named one of the top 50 fearless marketers in the world by Marketo, and is the best-selling author of Fuck Content Marketing, Focus on Content Experience. Yeah, he swears sometimes, as it says in his bio, and now, by default, I do as well. Randy, welcome to On Brand.
Amazing, Nick. That was a humbling intro. I hope I can live up to the hype there.
I think you absolutely can. So I also think, you know, you've got such an attention-getting book title, and it leads really to what is a through line in everything that you're about truly putting customers first. And I think that kind of underlining that you're doing with the book title and with stressing that in your bio is warranted, because I think customer first is one of those things that it's easy to give lip service to and a lot of people nod along to. But I feel like it's not always easy to walk that talk.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting way to put it in terms of the connection you made there, and one that I probably don't do often enough myself, despite how often I'm talking about this. I think as you put it there, when we're creating content marketing assets, we're very focused on what story do we need to tell for our organization. But when we talk about content experience, we have to think about how someone is going to experience that. And that's our customer. And, you know, what's their journey? At what point are they touching these things? What are they struggling with then? And how does it look, feel, all the different elements that they evaluate to determine, am I going to consume all the work that, you know, I don't deny the hard work and talent that a content marketer goes through, but that means nothing if we don't line up the content in a meaningful way.
Well, and sometimes do we sometimes confine the air quote customer first thing to, oh, I've got a persona, I kind of know who I'm writing this for. But I feel like really designing that content experience around the consumer is really kind of a different lift.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what I'll do, I mean, for everyone who's tuning in here who may be more familiar with the term content marketing versus content experience, just to help separate the two. In theory, the two didn't need to mean different things. Like, you know, Nick, I know you know great people like Robert Rose and, you know, Joe at Content Marketing Institute. I mean, those guys, when they came out with their original definitions of content marketing, it wasn't supposed to be overly associated with creating content. It was supposed to also go into distributing content and thinking about, you know, driving profitable customer action through that hard work. But I think what ended up happening for a lot of us, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this can relate, is that we overly associate content marketing purely with the creation piece. Right? Like, you know, when we think content marketers in our organizations, and some people listening to this may have that in their job title, a lot of people associate you as the writer, as the person who maybe came from a journalism degree or wrote for a media company before you came into a branded organization. And that's not an easy challenge, but sometimes it's a little unfair, I would argue, that we expect that same skilled individual to know how to line up a buyer journey, how to distribute content, and how to build these front-end web and digital experiences that aren't in any way aligned with authoring.
Well, it almost feels like it's this evolution in the definitions, because I think with the emergence of content really over the past decade here, that it was so different that now all of a sudden we have to have writers on our marketing team. That creation piece was kind of the biggest, scariest thing. But now as it becomes formalized, institutionalized, as it's a ongoing part of the routine, is it the job that's different, or?
You know, it's a great question. I think it's more what we do in life very often is we try and solve for what's in front of us, but we don't think about what's next once we solve that, right? I mean, everything that we solve for creates its own next problem, right? Getting into a taxi used to be a pain in the butt. Now there's Uber, but it creates other challenges, right? After Uber existed, we needed at airports new places for those Ubers to pick people up, right? All these things kind of evolve and change, and we always have to be thinking forward to the next step. So taking this back to content marketing, I think the issue that I often think of content marketing is we almost have to wave the flag at this point. We almost have to give content marketing to that heavy association that is creation, or potentially we see that evolve a bit. I'll give you an example that's interesting out there in the kind of the thought leaders of content marketing. One of them is Forrester. So Forrester is an analyst firm, if people aren't familiar with, kind of like Gartner and Forrester, all those guys. And they actually have they have these things called waves, where they look at a combination of technology and processes and understand, okay, how are people approaching that challenge of creating content and content marketing? And when they do this, they usually have criteria. It's like, these are the five things that are going to determine, who can do these well for you. If you look back, even 2 years ago, I think it was 2017, they had their wave for content marketing was very heavily focused on things like planning and governance, all the areas on how do we create content. But this past year in 2019, they came out with their new wave, and there was a huge shift in criteria. A lot of the weight shifted to what they call activation, right? And that's this idea, how do I use the content that we're creating? So, to come back to your, question that you posed, Nick, is I think it's just an evolution, right? It's we solved part one. We have figured out how to create content, and that's not easy. We should all pat ourselves on the back. But now we got to make sure that it doesn't sit there and go unused, because we battled as marketers for this budget to create content, to hire content marketers, to become branded agencies, if you will, and that wasn't easy. If we don't prove that ROI, I don't know what's going to happen to our content teams. It's almost like what has happened to a degree to social.
Well, and you talk about activation, and in solving those problems, we didn't know how to create content, so now we've solved for that. But now, of course, we see that there's so much content, and it's always a shuddering, sobering statistic to see how much content we're creating, or marketers in general are creating, and how much is actually finding a home. And I think that's the what's next of all of that, is making sure that we're actually creating things that people are able to do something with.
Absolutely. So a lot of people ask me, like, why did I have to drop this F-bomb in the title? And, this is the true story. I was on an airplane, no Wi-Fi situation. And so I was like, I'll write a blog post. And just before I took off, I read this stat. It was from Serious Decisions. And it said that 70% of the content that we create goes unused. And I thought to myself, like, oh, my God, that is terrible. That's like, I felt responsible myself, because I'm out there encouraging people to create content, often as a CMO telling my team, we need more content. We haven't created enough this month or this week or whatever the cadence is that we're looking for. And you know, so I sat there and I thought to myself, you know, about a blog post title. And I, the first one I was trying to figure out was stop content marketing. But I was like, no, it's not about stopping to create content. And as I struggled for a word, the only word that came to mind was like, fuck this if we're not going to use it, right? Like, this is silly, you know, and that is the point. I mean, I actually later followed up with the teams at Serious Decisions to ask them what that 70% referred to, because I couldn't believe it myself. I was like, you know, everyone uses their content, like they throw it on their web page. And we ended up having this dialogue where we realized, okay, well, just throwing it into our blog or our resource center or wherever we put that content, that doesn't mean it's being used. That just means it's sitting there, right? And the reality today, all of us know, we don't go beyond page one of Google results. You know, what's the chance that we're going to navigate someone's website to find content that's on page two, right? It's just not what we do. So the idea is the unused element is because we're not surfacing this content for the right buyer, depending on where they are in our journey.
Do you struggle to keep up with everything that's new with marketing today? Don't get frustrated. Get scrappy. I'd love to bring my Get Scrappy keynote to your next conference or corporate event. With a foot in the classroom and a foot in the field working with clients, I know what works and why, and I can't wait to share it with you during a talk that mixes strategic insights with tactical, practical tips. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with two A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So for the marketer out there that is listening to this, that's getting on a flight, that's encountering that stat with all of our unused content, beyond the book title, which profanity is so incredibly useful, and sometimes there's no same way to express just that, so that's I love the word choice, but beyond that, what is the what's the mission? How do we get around this challenge that we're up against now?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, just to reiterate, I'm not the guy who runs around the office or my house with three kids swearing. I like to consider myself pretty clean. I mean, I always say the barometer is I've got like a 12-year-old kid, 10-year-old, and 8-year-old. It's like we haven't even let our kids watch Deadpool yet, right? So we're good parents. I'm a good guy. But yeah, it was the right word here. And, you know, to answer you, I think it is moving our attention to this definition of content experience. And that is, you know, there's three terms that often come to mind for me when I think of what makes a great content experience. They come down to the idea of the environment, the structure, and the engagement that we can compel from our audience. You know, just breaking those down quickly for you, the environment is simply like the look and feel of that page that you put content on. I'm one to be drawn to analogies to explain things. You know, consider in this case, you know, drinking a Corona in your basement, right? You know, I mean, Corona typically tastes good anywhere, but it tastes way better when you transport yourself from the basement to a beach in Costa Rica.
Right.
It is just night and day when you hear the waves around you, the beautiful people, the sweat going down the bottle, the content, if you will, being inside of that bottle, or the content in our marketing can be the exact same, but the environment around us compels us to read more, drink more in the case of a Corona. These are important elements to look at. As you move into structure, it's the idea of tagging content so that we can surface the right content at the right time. In that case, think of how well Netflix does that, or Spotify accomplishes the ability to serve the right content to their audiences. If we organize our content well, we can tag and organize playlists, or, you know, the next episode, if you will, of content for our audience. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do with that engagement piece, is the last one is, you know, when we've done that work to set up a great environment to tag content properly, we can start to personalize content. And I would argue that's the expectation today, right? I used the example of Spotify a moment ago. I love Spotify. I think, I mean, first of all, it is wild to see how they are kicking ass in the market. I was just doing some research for another presentation, and Spotify now has 108 million subscribers, paid subscribers, to Apple only has 60 million, right? Like, how did that happen, right? Overnight, they went from 100, from Apple dominating with iTunes to Spotify. And I think what really captured people was their ability to personalize. Now, as marketers, we all get overwhelmed with that idea of personalized, right? When we hear personalized, we're like, oh, how am I going to create content for every person who's going to come and want to engage with me? And I take it back to Spotify. Like, when I open that app, no one's written a song for me, right? I'm not getting custom tracks, produced for me. It's more so the collection and assembly of music that lures me in, right? It's those Discover daily, weekly playlists that are given. And that's the experience that marketers need to emulate.
Well, I love all of those points, and the example that you gave on environment, I can't believe how relevant that is to me. I was on a lake vacation just last week, and had forgotten how enjoyable a Corona is by the water. But then I get back home and trying to kind of capture some of those moments from vacation. I buy myself a 6-pack of Corona. And I'm standing here in my kitchen drinking it, and it's just not the same. Still good, but not as good as well.
You probably are still working through that 6-pack, whereas up at the lake, you would have gone through it in the afternoon.
Oh, exactly. Which, you could probably say something about the engagement from there as well. But I think that the last point on engagement and the challenges of personalization, that feels like another thing that's easy to give lip service to, but it's much harder to actually build something that does that.
Yeah, I people get overwhelmed. I always say you got to start somewhere. I'll give you a great example. There's a marketer who I think is really bright, a company that's growing very quickly called Snowflake. Right. And they're a data warehousing platform. And they're a customer of mine over at Uberflip. The cool part about what they were doing, even before they were using us, is they said, you know what, we want to try this personalization thing. We want to, go after some accounts that they really knew they could close, kind of in more of an account-based marketing approach. And they said, there's like these 10 accounts that we know we want to land. We should land them. We just have to tell them why they need to work with us. So what they did was they went out and they figured out all these go-to-market strategies with, email communication and retargeted ads and all these things. And they put a degree of personalization into them. But the big thing that they made sure was that anytime someone clicked on a link in social, an email that was sent to them, an ad that they saw, that they dropped onto a page of content that was truly personalized and handpicked for them, right? It was no different than that Spotify playlist that we just talked about, right? These were pieces of content that fit their industry, the messaging on the top of the page aligned to them. So one of the examples they showed me recently that they did was for Tinder, right? Now the ad, instead of saying click here to learn more, said swipe here to learn more. Right? Or swipe right or left. I don't know which way you swipe, but whichever way you swipe is the way they encouraged. And I'm happily married. It's all good. So they click through and then, they're greeted with content that ties around their industry. And a lot of that content is content that lived in Snowflake's library of content. It was part of probably that 70% of content that we would typically see go unused. But in this case, they understood where this person was in their buyer journey, and they were able to tailor that. Now, as I said, and you were overwhelmed, Nick, or people may be overwhelmed, it's like, how am I going to do this at scale? The first time they did this, they just proved it out as a concept that would work for 10 accounts. They saw massive engagement, right? And as marketers, I think that's what we always have to remember. We have to prove our strategies at the beginning. Last I spoke to Daniel, he's done this for 1,500 different accounts where he's built these streams of content, you know, tied to all their different go-to-market strategies. And, you know, the way he does that, that I kind of unpack in the book that I wrote is what I call the content experience framework. And it's five simple steps to think about how to set yourself up to scale these ideas once you prove that they will work.
So is there an elevator version of the content experience framework?
You mean a podcast listening?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Like the
situation. Yeah. I think we've hit on some of them already today. The five steps in a nutshell are: first, to centralize your content, pull it all together. Second step there is to organize your content, which is a lot of the tagging that we've already spoken about so far. The third step is the personalization, right? You know, a lot of us try and just run to personalize everything, but if we don't take time to do those first two steps around pulling the content assets you have together and tagging them through the structure piece or organization piece, then we can't personalize at scale, right? So those first two are the least sexy, I would say, but they're the most important to being able to do this in scale of, like, to Daniel's point, 1,500 accounts. Once we get there, we're doing everything that we're doing. It's distribution, right? And everything that we do as marketers is we distribute, right? We distribute in email, in social, in paid ads, in direct mail packages. But we always then need to link back to that third step, which is those personalized experiences that we built. Those are the four steps. The fifth is kind of one that blankets around, which is the idea of generating results and, you know, understanding the path of what people are doing so that we can do it better the next time.
So we've talked about this path and really putting customers first and designing the experience that way. One topic beyond knowing your customers is knowing yourself, your brand. And one of my favorite things that I often cite Uberflip for and include it in my book, Brand Now, is your style guide that is very easy to find, and you have that online that's easy to get out there, and you have a great section on brand voice that I love because it talks about both what your team members should aim for, but what they shouldn't as well. They've got the cheeky but not offensive, accessible
right,
but not fluffy, progressive but not aloof. And I think that those the point and the counterpoint are incredibly instructive.
Thanks. Now listen, I'm definitely brand minded. My co-founder also very brand minded, and you know, we take brands seriously, but we also don't take ourselves too seriously, as I said up front with you before we went on air. And you know, even just our brand choice of color, if no one's seen us before, you know, you won't miss us at a trade show event because we are this bright pink, you know, impactful color, which is, you know, not necessarily that secure feel you get with a blue. But I think we do so in a way where we kid around a bit with ourselves, but you know, we do take ourselves seriously. We just did a whole series of new videos, and if you go to our homepage, you actually get to the first one through there. You can find them on YouTube and things like that. And we had a lot of fun with those too, playing with the brand, and I think it's something that allows us to guide back all the time. You know, to make sure that we have some fun. We know who our audience, our marketers, right? Marketers are creative. They're looking for something a little bit different. And there's just little elements all along that we've always been able to keep fresh in our brand repertoire, if you will, to ensure that, you know, that we balance that line. One of them that I know you and I both know Jay Baer, he wrote about in his book, is our pink headbands, right?
Yes.
Which, you know, they're the stupidest thing ever. But I always say, if something's stupid and it's working, just like go with it, right? And you know, that's really what happened there. I mean, everyone's like, how did you think of that? It was like a 5-minute decision where I had to go to a party where we had to bring 100 of a swag item. I was in charge of marketing it with a very small team in the early days and ordered these 100 headbands. We went to the party, came back with a dozen left, and you know, you have those that list that you can email once, you know, because you co-sponsored the party. Yeah. Here's 3,000 names. So, yeah, we're debating, what do we send? Yeah, do we go all serious or, you know, put our product in? And I was like, you know, we've got 12 of these headbands. What if we just tell everyone that they forgot their headband at the event and that, you know, send us your mailing address and we'll send one to you. And literally what happened is, yeah, we think it'll at least get people's attention. We didn't think people would fill out the link to the form that we had. We had over 150 people fill out this form saying, that's my headband, right? And, you know, everyone just wanted this silly headband, you know, with a picture of me probably drinking a Corona to our earlier conversation that we put in there. And before you know it, you know, it was funny. Our junior marketing coordinator at the time came to my desk. He goes, we got a problem. We only have 150 of these things. Or we have 150 asks, we only have a dozen of them. What do you want to do? And I was like, you know, people want to put our logo on their head, like just order more, like, you know, I don't know where the price break comes in, but order at that price break. Yeah. We're going to roll with this. So I think sometimes like we said, you gotta jump on those stupid ideas, you know, make sure that there's room for it in your brand if you want to go in that direction. But you know, we're fortunate with the type of fun brand that we have.
Well, I think that's great, and I love the quote about something stupid, and sticking with it. Sometimes we overbake these ideas and end up taking ourselves a little too seriously. Pretty sure I have one of those pink headbands somewhere here around my office as well. So speaking of
that, I heard over 30,000 of them since we started doing it. So it's very possible. I've seen dogs walking down the street with them.
I was going to say, you think about headbands distributed has to equal heads out there that know something about Uberflip. So that's pretty good. So as we talk about not taking yourself seriously, you've mentioned a few brands. As we wrap up, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Sure. You know, I love branding all around me all the time. So I could list off so many. I'm going to go one that it's making me smile, but also just getting me to go outside of my norm. It's disrupting me. It's disrupting my normal approach. And that's Peloton, right? Now, I'm one of those guys who I need things to consistently be changing to stick to anything, let alone going to the gym. But if people don't know what Peloton is, it's this bike, you know, which people are going to be like, you're spending way too much on it, which I agree. I spent way too much on it. But it's a bike in your home. And the beauty is that they have this connection to be able to stream live classes to you. So, you know, as of a year ago, they had like over 10,000 on-demand classes that you could log into. And I think it's, you know, I always get fascinated by this idea of delivering one piece of content after another that continues to be more relevant. And that's what they're doing with me, right? Like it's, you know, when I go to the, if I went to an actual spinning class, I'm rolling the dice as to whether or not the instructor is going to hit that chord with me. Is the playlist they play going to make me happy that day? You know, the beauty with Peloton is I search through based on the type of music I like, based on the beat I like, based on the mix of weights to cycling that I want to do. And I think what I love about them is that they understand, you know, this opportunity to disrupt and to connect with people in a more personalized way. And that I mean, that's a lot of what we've been talking about today. I know it's more, this is a different angle to it, but I think it's a really cool brand for the future.
Well, I think that does tie to a lot of the things that you've been talking about as the pieces of the content experience. So, love it. Randy, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Thanks. Thanks for that opportunity to say so. So, you know, one place to go is definitely get the book. You know, Fuck Content Marketing. You can get it on Amazon is probably the most common place people would go to. If you want to, sometimes it's hard to know how you would spell such book. So if you want, you can just go to brand.com. So that's B-Rand, as in Randy, rand.com, which is my personal site. And right there, you should be able to direct to the book and find it with no problem. Other than that, follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I'm probably most active from a social perspective, or, you know, stay tuned on You know, the Uberflip website, or the big event you mentioned that we do, is in August of this month. So, you know, we'll have about 750 marketers there that I'll get to hang out with.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Randy, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, you can find show notes, links, and more at onbrandpodcast.com. If you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment, rate and review the show to help others find it. For more info on me, including how you can sign up for my newsletter, please visit nickwestergaard.com. That's Westergaard with two A's. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.